Live and direct from Nairobi, Kenya. It's the Global Citizen Podcast. What's up, everybody? I'm back again. Today, live from Adam's Arcade at the Greenhouse, which is a... this is probably wrong, but it seems like an eco-friendly mall. And today I have a special guest, Kevin Service, who is an MC, beatmaker, and a radio host here in Nairobi, Kenya. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Kevin and I met when I was, he was working, for a radio company, and I literally was loitering. I walked in and thought I was going to get kicked out, but Kevin was like, "What's up, man?" And, we started to rap, and I liked his vibe. I liked the work he was doing. And then, he heard about my story, how I decided to, move to Kenya on a whim. Yeah. And he was like, "That's crazy. That's dope." And then ever since then, we've been keeping in touch, and I've been meaning to have you on for a while, man. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate this, man. I really do. And as far as eco-friendly, heck nah, man. Nah.
It looks
to play
like
with the flowers and the green, nah.
It's a really nice place, though.
Yeah.
But so you're an MC in Nairobi. So when I first moved here, I really had not much of a clue on what was really good in Nairobi in terms of the music scene, the pop culture scene. You know, I figured I would just get here and just kind of get my hands dirty. So you've been an MC and a radio host and a beat maker for how long?
I'd say a beat maker maybe around 05-ish. When I was in the U.S., a friend of mine, I was working at this phone company, customer service. Stay away from that, people, unless you really got to pay the bills. And just one day, because music was my passion. Mm. I just didn't know where to start. So my friend, his name is Nate, I was like, "Yeah, man, I have this software if you want to check it out." I was like, "Okay, I'll check it out." Of course, Fruity Loops.
Yeah.
Everybody's been there. And that's how I started, man.
So that's how you started. Were you making beats? So in the States, were people listening to your stuff? Did your beat making, did it have a Kenyan influence, or were you really influenced by like hip hop in the States?
Pretty much the hip hop culture, because that's even when I moved out there, I was already kind of into hip hop already.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual introduction I had to hip hop because I was a fan of, because of my aunt, I was a fan of like back when CMC Music Factory and Black Box and all kinds of, I'm telling my age right now.
Yeah.
So I'm at my cousin's birthday party.
Uh-huh.
And this dude is like, I guess it was a friend. "Yo, dude, so what kind of music you listen to?" And I tell him, like, "Oh, really? You don't listen to, like, Snoop?" I was like, "Who's that?"
Doggy style.
Yeah, man. "Tupac, who is that?" "Yeah, it's rap, man." So I started getting into it. I was like, "Yo, this is dope." So my first album, actually, I had to beg my mom for it. It was still a cassette tape. It was Snoop's album, Doggy Style.
Classic.
I begged the heck out of her to get that. Yeah, man. And then a friend of mine played me and took it. But anyway, that's how I started listening to hip-hop. So that influence, I went with.
Mm.
But as far as making beats, I guess because I was already into hip-hop, I really liked, you know, the style of beats that was going on back then. But I also wanted to integrate a little bit of African something. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't sure when, because I was just starting out.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think that, you know, you were introduced to hip-hop because you were kind of in the States. Do you think hip-hop is big here in Nairobi?
It's huge.
Like American hip-hop or Kenyan hip-hop?
No. American hip-hop
really
is huge. Kenyan hip-hop is now really getting big. Because when I was leaving, there was this now movement of, you know, rap is a thing. People need to start respecting rap. So that's about 10 years ago. We're talking about 98, 99, you know. So it was starting to get there. So when I came back from the U.S., like, it was a culture now.
Mm.
You know, it was a real thing. People were making money off of it and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a big thing right
now. So who would you say right now is big in Nairobi amongst people, you know, I guess from the ages of 15 to, you know, 35, 40?
Because the culture is so young still, there's a lot of up-and-comings.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, as far as the most popular MCs, well, let me say rappers, because MC is a totally different thing.
Mm.
most popular rappers right now, I would say it's Khaligraph Jones and Octopizzo. I would say are two of the most prominent rappers right now.
And they're, are they Nairobi based, or are they both from Nairobi?
Yes, they are both from Nairobi. And I will say, you know, Octopizzo is the one really eating off of his craft.
So he's the one that's kind of like blowing up. Yes, people are buying his, his stuff. And he has concerts frequently?
Not frequently, actually, which is a funny thing. But I guess he's working with a team that makes sure he puts out quality stuff when it comes to production.
What is he? So, like, you know, American rap right now, hip-hop, has changed so much.
True.
So I feel like the only... there are maybe two hip-hop artists that are mainstream that are making... by positive music, I mean, like, where they're not talking about, like, you know, bitches and
hoes.
Can
I take a guess?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Kendrick and the boy J. Cole?
Exactly. Those are the only... yeah, those are the only two.
That's true.
Everybody else, they're just going in a different direction. Even the boy Drake, even though he sings a lot. I think his last album was trash, by the way. But
damn,
I do. I like Drake, but I thought the last album was not good. But are these guys, Octopizzo and Khaligraph Jones, what do they kind of rap about? Is it positive things, or is it kind of like money and cars? Money, cars.
Yeah, it's more commercial than anything.
Yeah.
Which, I guess it's unfortunate because it's the reverse of how hip-hop started in the U.S.
Right.
It was more activism and consciousness, and then it moved to commercial. But I guess since the influence we got, and probably what they got, was already commercial, so that's what they, you know, get inspiration from.
Got you.
Yeah.
So let me, I'm going to try to go back a little bit, the timeline. So, you know, you seem like someone who probably, when you were younger, you were very popular. So what's like being like a teenager in Nairobi like? What's it like? What was it like for you? And what do you think it's like now?
Back then, I have to say, growing up, you hear the parents always say, you know, man, kids are different these days. That's how I feel right now. But I don't know. It just seems we had it way better in terms of exposure to creativity. I know it's around the world. People spend more time at home. Kids everywhere spend more time at home than they do outside.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, when school closed, like, you know, the vacation time or whatever, you were home in the morning for breakfast, you came for lunch, and you came for dinner. The rest of the time, you were somewhere doing something as a kid.
Get lost, right?
Exactly. Whether it's hunting pigeons, riding bikes, messing around with people's dogs in another neighborhood, competitions.
Yeah.
It was something, man. Right. It was rare to find a kid at home. Mm. And now it's just a flip. You know, you walk around neighborhoods and you...
no one in the
streets. You barely see anybody. Exactly. Mm. You know, so that's the huge difference, I would say. And I think it has affected the creativity.
Mm.
Because now... okay, not to be like a conspiracy theorist, but TV is powerful.
Very powerful.
I mean, there's no denying the influence of television, whether people want to admit it or not. So you can really see that. So most people are drawing identity from what they're seeing on TV. They don't really know what their thing is.
Mm.
So 9 out of 10 times, they'll sound like somebody else and be like, oh, you're trying to, you know.
Trying to be like so-and-so. I agree. And even so, even if you don't have access to a TV, there's the internet now, which is crazy.
Yes.
It's nuts. I think it's almost, I don't want to say it's worse, because it's also helpful in a way.
I think the liberty is scary.
Yeah.
The access, the information you have access to is scary.
Yeah. So would you say, like, you know, I think it's easy to see the influence TV has on Americans. Do you think it's kind of the same here? Like, by that, I mean, like, TV kind of tells you what to think, what to say, what to do, who to follow. Because here, I feel like TV, there's a lot of... what I like about TV here, and at least, is the TV that I've watched. There are a lot of black people on... the Kenyans produce their own content a lot.
True.
And they also push other African content. So there's mad Nigerian movies. And then, you know, the commercials, even if it's for, like, butter, is black people eating butter.
True.
And that's hard in the States.
That's true.
It's just a lot of, you don't see that too much.
Yeah.
So despite that, you still think that the content being put out is still kind of, like, shaping people?
Yes, it is. If you just want to know, here's the easiest way to see how it's affecting the culture. Any group of young teenagers that speaks English.
Mm-hmm.
You will hear it. You will hear the influence of hip-hop and TV. And not in the conscious like sense, but more in the I'm hip.
Right.
I mean, we say nigga out here, you know?
Yeah. People like, yeah, my I heard nigga. That when I first came and see you in action, there was another group of younger cats. I could say younger cats. And it was just dropping M-bombs.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. You could see and you're like, wow.
I mean, I can't say I was shocked, but I was just, I found that interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. It's something else, man. And that's where you can tell and you can just see, you know, the way they dress, the way they talk.
Yeah.
I've watched a couple of KRS-One videos.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they call him the teacher.
Yeah.
And there's this way he breaks down hip hop. Like hip hop all caps, hip hop, H is caps, and then just lowercase hip hop. So there's the culture, there's the business, there's the creativity. And right now we're still in that kind of business, the commercial hip hop thing going on.
Here in Kenya.
Yes. Mm. The one person I have to commend who is a social activist / rapper is a guy called Hustler J. This dude goes in when it comes to standing up for hip-hop and then using hip-hop to actually try and change the culture of the country when it comes to politics now and things like that and engage the youth. Yeah, okay. He's all in when it comes to that. But everybody else, man, it's just what you heard with the little group.
Yeah,
you know what
that's
I'm saying?
What it's, that's where it's going towards,
that's
huh?
That's pretty much what it is.
So talking more about like pop culture, like what's important to young Kenyans? So, like, for example, I would say Image is big in the United States, but, like, yes. A lot of, like, the chit-chat in terms of, like, what you hear on avenues of pop culture, it's kind of, like, who's doing what.
Yeah.
What's important to it's not even Kenyan youth. I just want to say, like, the 20s, 30s Kenyans, those that don't have kids yet or...
In the sense of talking about, if we stick with just music and art...
Mm-hmm.
You have three groups. You have a group of people who come from rich families and that are able to indulge themselves in the arts because they have a backup.
Mm.
Like, if this doesn't work out...
I could just fall back, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then one of our most popular groups. Not to put them, like, in a negative light. I mean, it's a blessing. If you have parents that could take care of you, whatnot, it's cool.
Yeah.
Camp Mula. A majority of the group, you know, they're set.
Yeah.
You know, because of their parents. That's the one, number one... Like, that's one group.
Right.
And then you have the second group who are trying to do something with the culture, but because right now it doesn't really pay, they still have to have regular jobs, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll say one guy that I know, he's an OG, man. Shout out to Johnny Vigetti. He is in one of the first hip-hop groups in Kenya that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Kala Mashaka. When you talk about... Who can I think of? If you think of a 50 Cent or somebody who came from the streets, came into the culture, and then used the street to support his culture, and then went back to the streets or something, that would be the guy I talk about. So he like represents the second group, like just street dudes, but who has to kind of do what he has to do to get by. He'll tell you himself, man, he had to get into crime, whatever, because of drug addiction and whatnot. So you have that group. And then you have the middle class, you know, who's kind of has this balance of, I have a little comfort, and I guess I can still do this over here.
Right.
You know, it's cool. But the biggest problem with all three of these groups is none of them can sell music in Kenya right now.
Oh.
You know?
Really?
So
they just do it for, like, hobby? Or is it a passion?
No. I mean, they're trying to sell it. Right. They're trying to sell it. They're trying to make money off of it. But because of what you've just said now, a majority of music you hear in Kenyan radio... you watch on Kenya TV is American. Or is, let's not even go that far, Nigeria, like you said, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny, you put it in a positive light when you said, yeah, man, you guys support each other, you guys like play a lot of Nigerian music. But to these guys, that's actually a bad thing. They're complaining because of like, play our music. You know?
Even Tanzanian music is getting a lot of bump lately.
Yeah.
It's nice, I'm not gonna
lie. That's what's hurting it. That's what's hurting Kenyan artists, especially. It's like everybody's getting it except us. What is going on? You know, so.
What do you think is going on? Because I've been noticing, like, when I hear the radio and it's not American music, it's either lately. I mean, the Nigerian music is taking the world by storm. It's not just the continent, it's the States as well. Wizkid is on Drake's album,
which is huge.
Huge, he's good. And then now lately I've been hearing a lot more Tanzanian music, man, at the barbershop. My barbershop is pretty hip, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't have said hip. It's dope. I'm gonna edit that out. But they bump a lot of Tanzanians. The Kamba guy.
Ali Kiba.
Yeah. There we go. He's been getting a lot of love.
Yes, he has.
And I don't really know what Kenyan music is like. I'll hear it. I've heard it. I went to a thrift social. Shout out to them. Going to the next one tomorrow. I heard there's one dude, he performed. It's like, I forgot the name of the group, but it was good. But I don't hear, they don't get much love here. Even like at these concerts, we have dudes from Congo. What's his name the other day? Blankets and Wine. What's the dude's name? I don't like him very much. I'm forgetting his name.
The U.S.?
Yeah.
Alu Black.
I don't hate him. I think some of his music, he's just pushing towards the mainstream. Anyway, but why is it that like Kenyan music, hip hop, or other forms of it is not really on that platform?
It's really a complex dilemma because artists see one thing.
Mm.
The people holding the throne of airplays is another thing. And then the general public is another thing. So you have artists, which this is what I noticed when I came back. What artists lack compared to the US is desperation. Desperation is why our music is not as good as it could be. And by that I mean, somebody is not so desperate that they're like, this is all I got, I'm gonna give it every freaking thing I have.
All the chips are going in the middle.
Exactly.
Right.
This is it. I have no. So, which, because when you're that desperate, guess what you get to do all day?
Music.
Nothing but practice. You know? I mean, you listen to, good example, because he's from the streets, man. He's from Crazy Hood. Kendrick.
Yeah. Compton.
You. It's beyond now lyrics. You hear a soul in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Man. True?
Very true.
You hear a soul in there because you can tell this dude wanted it back. Like, wherever he was, it was just...
This is it.
Yeah.
I feel you.
That's what artists like here.
Yeah.
Because they still have this fallback of, okay, in Kenya we have this thing where... In the U.S. you have homes where you send your grandparents and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
In Kenya, we call it ushago, shags. Basically, the rural areas where... If it gets really bad in the city, I'll just fall back and go to my grandparents' place, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've been trying to tell artists, in the U.S., they don't have that. There's no, if it gets really bad, I'll go to my grandma's. Or,
this is it.
Yeah. This is it.
Very few artists are like, come from, or even middle class.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that passion and that drive is missing. Somebody will write something, maybe in like 10 minutes, and they'll be like, that's good enough. Make a beat, that's good enough. You know, nobody will like take a beat and work for it. A few people, shout out to Atual, that's one of the guys I know. If it takes a year, it'll take a year.
Yeah,
we'll get this right.
Right.
You know, but that's what's happening, because you have this, I gotta make that money right now, so I gotta put this out right now. But it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, so you have that issue. And then you have these guys who are now holding the thrones in like radio. You have to, as an artist, you have to accept that these guys are about numbers.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to get sponsors. If their numbers are not there,
they're not,
what are we supposed to do?
Right.
So I could play your music, but I need numbers, which now leads to the final thing. The only way to get numbers in Kenya is to play music that relates to Kenyans. Now, the problem is, about 80% of Kenyans is still rural. They're still like the old type of music.
Yeah.
That's why Tanzanian music is good. Nigerian, because a lot of those guys' music is heavily influenced by the culture. A lot of our music right now, as far as like urban music, has that hip hop American sound.
Right, it's not original.
Exactly. So you take a guy from the rural, he doesn't want to hear that.
Right.
Give me something dance, something you know, catchy I can dance to, whatnot. A lot of hip hop is not necessarily like that, and even the message.
Right.
So now you have those three issues. So since Nigerian music is getting me numbers, I'm gonna play that on my radio station.
Yeah.
Same with all other kinds of music.
Yeah.
You know, so you guys have to figure out a way to do that. Now, there's a group that came out that fixed that problem, if for a season, called Camp Mula. They were probably the biggest group after, I'm willing to say they would have been as big as Sauti Sol if they were still together. they broke those barriers. They figured out a way to get a sound that Kenyans loved, that radio loved, that Safaricom loved, and signed them up.
So for those, you know, Safaricom is like the Verizon
pretty
of
much,
Kenya.
Yeah. And so they opened that door, and people were like, oh, wait, okay, hip-hop isn't really that bad, and, you know? But then they broke up, and then it was back to square one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
How many people were in the Kent Moolah?
It was three people.
Okay.
It was Kusma, Teo, and Shapa.
Mm-hmm.
And then their hype man was Mikey. I'm sorry. It was four people. Kusma, Teo, Shapa, and Karen. That was the group. And they did really well. If you even look them up, man. They, in fact, they got a BET nomination. I almost forgot. Yes, they did.
Write this down myself.
They got a BET nomination. They did something special for the culture.
Yeah.
But I know these people. They put time into their craft.
Right. There's no fallback.
Now, back to what I was saying. That's the group I was telling you, their parents, if they needed, like,
they got
sorted.
Them,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're sorted. But still, you could hear the quality in the music. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the struggle right now. Mm. You have a group of people who want the music played, but the music is not good enough. You have people who want the numbers. And then you have the reality that most of the country is still not majority urban. Like,
yeah.
It's not urban.
Mm.
You know, so.
That's interesting that you say that. And me, you know, I've been in Kenya for about going on 4 months. So I've only seen Nairobi, and I've only seen, I guess I would probably assume the middle, upper middle class part of Nairobi. And I get this notion that Kenyans, at least in Nairobi, are about that money.
Yep.
Like, they're just always about that money. And it's something I admire as well. And it's not a bad thing, but they're always about, like, you know, they have a job, they got another job.
Yeah.
There's always, the gears are always moving. And I guess maybe this is something that might be holding back artists, because the way you explained it, the ones that have something to fall back on aren't that hungry.
Correct.
But that's interesting that you put it that way.
Yeah, man, that's what it is. And considering you're saying that, think about the fact that a lot of stuff that you listen to, even on those artists' iPods that are trying to break out, is American. So this is what I used to do.
Mm.
I used to work at Sub-Sahara. Shout out to the fam over there.
What's Sub-Sahara? Sorry.
It's a studio.
Okay, got you.
They're the guys where Kent Moolah was signed.
Okay.
Yeah. So artists would come in. This was my first good job when I came back. And I would just ask him, okay, so you're an artist. Let me hear something. You hear somebody stutter. I immediately know you don't have a passion.
Yeah.
I don't have to ask you twice. I tell them, I just came from a country. Somebody will knock on P. Diddy's window in traffic and be like, yo, I got some bars. Yo, just listen.
Yeah.
And then go in, you know? But, oh, really, right now? I wasn't ready. I hadn't prepared.
X. Yeah.
You're out.
Remember when P. Diddy did that show, The Band?
Yeah.
Or Making a Band.
Making
how cutthroat he was. We would laugh.
That's
but
the reality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It is the reality.
Was it not?
Yeah, no, it is.
That was the reality because, you know, honestly speaking, where's the, in fact, the first group was Da Bam, right?
Yeah.
Where are they at now?
Except
for, I know, what's his name? I know Ines is still doing battles and whatnot
because
I follow the culture.
Yeah.
But where's everybody else?
Yeah.
You know, Babs is kind of doing like a female battling thing, I think.
Yeah, there was Chopper. Everybody loved Dylon. Everyone loved
Dylon.
Yeah, Dylon.
Yeah. But so that's the first thing, and then I was like, okay, so let me hear something, and then eventually they maybe sing or spit something, and I'd be like, okay, do you think you're good enough? Number one. Number two, do you believe you can make money with your music? And if they told me yes, I'd just ask him a simple question. When's the last time you personally bought a Kenyan album? Never. How many Kenyan tracks do you have on your phone right now? None, really.
Lie, guys, lie.
So it's like, and it's just a reality. So question to them was, how can I sign you when even you don't support your own music, number one? And if it's so hard to support your own music, how much worse will it be if you're not even that good at it, if not passionate about it?
Right.
And that's the problem we had.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
passion is a problem.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
You know? And then that, like, back to what you're saying, we like making money.
Yeah.
Buying music is not a priority for us
right
now, unfortunately. So, It hurts, but that's the reality.
It's the reality.
Yeah.
I understand that. Let me talk more about you. So you said that you went to the States when you were 18?
Yes.
So Nairobi, Kenya, United States of America. Where in the States?
Oh my gosh. Like in a town probably fewer people than at the restaurant we're in right now.
Five.
Haviland, Kansas, man. I went to Barclay College over there. Shout out to, it's about, what is it, maybe an hour and a half or so from Wichita,
Kansas. Oh, God.
Yeah, very small. Very small town, probably around 600 people total. The town's population will go up by like maybe 40% when school was open.
Right, because people were coming from other parts of Kansas, probably. Yeah.
But yeah, that's where I went, man.
How was that like? From Nairobi. Nairobi's a pretty... I like Nairobi. Nairobi's a pretty dope city, folks. And going from there to outside, an hour outside of Wichita.
Yeah, it was different, man.
Yeah.
It was different, just to be polite. And the culture shock was because... Now, we're talking about Haviland, Kansas, so... No offense, but you know ain't no black people
out there. No.
You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly.
Let me tell you how many black people were there. Yeah. Probably about 4 or 5, and 3 of those were students.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you can imagine that, like, the culture shock for me going from here to it's just like, and then it's Haviland, Kansas. A lot of the people are older people, so you can still sense this mentality from the.
What are you doing here? Saying.
Yeah, you can still see it. But that's what it was like, man. Fortunately for me, because this is what I thank hip-hop for, the exposure. So it didn't really feel like I was lost or out of place, so to speak, because I could still relate to a lot of the things that we did. Because
hip-hop exposed you to ideas and like, okay, yeah.
Exactly. So it's
that's
like,
dope.
Yeah, so if somebody says like, yo, have you... I'm like, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't too lost, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you spent 4 years there?
12 years of slave, man.
12 years in Haviland, Kansas.
12 years. And I'm not joking when I say 12 years. I left here September 2000. I came back September 2012.
Why did you stay there for 12 years? I mean, the four years I get, you know.
Yeah, that's the school visa.
Right.
But the reality of the grind, man, where it gets to a part, of course, you can't really afford school fees, tuition, whatnot. So it's like, you know, fam out there is like, it's time to get that job. You got to do what you got to do, you know. I ain't about to be no snitch, but so did what I had to do to get a job.
Yeah.
Left school. And that was pretty much my life there, man. Just mostly working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to figure out who I am. Trying to figure out what I want to do.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I was in that environment because it helped a lot to know. Because you can see the passion in other people. Like, when it's this one thing, man, it's this one thing. There's nothing else.
Right.
You know, and the idea of, I usually say, America came up with the greatest advertisement in the world.
Which was?
Any movie, any TV show, anything that came from America sold America as the promised land.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
White picket fence.
Yo.
Running water or...
Yo.
You know.
Everybody believes... Let me tell you how crazy it is. When I went to the embassy, I watched people cry as they were leaving when they were denied visas.
Mm.
Because this was the great hope that they had. Like, so that turned down. And then, of course... Yo, man, shout out to the U.S. Y'all are pimps. The amount of money they make off of applications, which is non-refundable.
Oh, my God. Yo, it's a hustle.
Bro.
It's like a hustle.
Yo, it's no joke. So you have these parents who believed America was the place, saved up all their money, maybe sold some land to just afford some money to, you know, pay for the application, and then you get turned down. It's heartbreaking.
You get turned down in an instant.
Yo, it's like, sorry.
Yeah. You know? So, when you left Kenya to go there, to Haviland, Kansas, did you have this idea, like, I'm going to, like, America, I'm going to Kansas, I'm like, yo, I'm about to hope. I mean, I think it's okay to feel hopeful about going to a new place and going to school, but were you thinking, like, man, I'm like, did you feel like I'm escaping this place?
It's funny you would use that word, Joel, because for me... It was an escape that I had been praying for all my life.
Mm.
Because I always felt like an outsider. And then just some personal family things that had happened.
Right.
that were kind of tough, you know, didn't really have that good bond you're supposed to have with your dad. I still respect the man. I love that guy.
Right.
But, and even if you know, like, if you watch Vines, you'll see how African culture is, like, how dads talk to their sons and whatnot. Just watch some Vines, man. You'll know what I'm talking about, man. But it was an escape for me, man.
Right.
Because I was like, finally, I get to get away from this feeling like I'm out of place. These restrictions, because I love music, man.
Yeah.
Like, Pops was like, that's not about to take you anywhere.
Right.
Forget that.
Yeah. That's a very outside of America thing, where fathers, mothers too, are like, music, the arts. Like, I come from Haiti, which is like the arts.
Mm.
And you don't see many people, unless they're really about it, pushing that type of stuff. You know, they push, you know, lawyer, doctor, engineer. Yes. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And that's not really the reality for everybody.
Yeah, I always say, the consequence of us forcing those career paths to our kids is the bunch of offices that you come to in Kenya, and about 60% of the time the person is not there. You just see their coat on the chair.
Yeah.
Like, they're late to come in and early to leave.
Right.
Because people hate their jobs, man. But you made them believe this was it.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, so far, at least for, because now I work in Kenya, the Kenyans I work with, you motherfuckers grind, yo. Like, I'm like, God damn. I'm like, geez, they get it in. And it's actually very impressive, you know, all the Kenyans that I've met that are working work hard.
Yeah.
Americans work hard too, but Kenyans really grind. So back to you. So you left, you're like, I'm hopeful. When did it hit where you were like, oof, like, I'm cool, but like, oof, like, this is not really an American dream for me? Like,
I think when I got... when I left college, and when I couldn't pay for the tuition and whatnot, and I had to get a job, and the reality that off of that paycheck that from your first, maybe second job that you get, most of it is just bills, man. And it's like, dang.
Can you pay my bills?
Most of it is just bills, and then you're just living to pay bills. And
right.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say, in many ways, I was better off there. Like, people will probably be better off there than here because of opportunity. Gotcha. When it comes to opportunity and being able to make money from something, I believe it's way better there than it is here. The difference has always been Africa is rich in culture, America is rich in commerce. You know, America's great power is commerce, man, capitalism, whatnot. Our great power is culture. So whoever finds the balance is killing it.
Right.
You know, which is what hip-hop did pretty much.
Mm.
You know, there's people who found that balance, took the culture, took the business side of it, and they're killing it.
Right.
You know, but that reality of, man, I'm just working to wake up, go to work, come. Let me tell you how crazy it is, Joe. I was in the U.S. 12 years. I could mention the places I've been. Maybe I could count them in 10, like in 10 fingers, man.
The places you've been before going to the U.S.?
No. While I was in the U.S., a whole 12 years, I didn't go...
many places.
Yeah.
Because you was working.
Had to work, man.
Yeah.
Had to work. That was pretty much it. So it was like, wow, okay. So I guess this is it.
No, that's a real thing. And I think a lot of people, like my cousins, who left Haiti to go to school. So let's say there were 5 of them that came to the States... or North America, rather. Only one of them remained. Everybody was just like, I'm ready to get the fuck out of here and go back to a place where I can work, but I can, like, live also.
Yeah.
So when did you know, I mean, in terms of, like, you were coming back, were you looking forward to it, or did you know, like, I just gotta go home?
I have nothing against my country in the sense of... living here or whatnot, but I never wanted to come back. Not because of the place, but because I already felt alone. Why would I go back to a place where now I'm going back to a place with less opportunity and still feel alone? Because now I've been away this long,
right?
it's now going to be another culture shock.
Disconnection. Yeah, exactly. You hadn't been back in 12 years, so you would...
Not one time.
Wow.
Not one time. Let me tell you how I got back, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so, because it's nothing that I... So, I'd been, of course, in the U.S. for a while, whatever. Got married.
In the U.S.?
Yeah. And then, so that's your opportunity, usually, like... It's I think it's a law, if you get married, you can apply for a green card.
Right.
So I did that. Unfortunately, because I had worked for so long without permission,
mm-hmm.
that cost me during the application. Because it's a...
Uncle Sam found
out. Immigration offense. It's an immigration felony if you work without permission.
Right.
Basically, if you lie in your application and say you're a citizen when you apply for a job. And I didn't feel like lying. Honestly, where I was mentally... I was just in this place where I was like, whatever you do in my life, God, I'm down. If it means I have to go back, I have to go back. If you close this door, that's what it is. So that's where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so application came back, couldn't go. So they had to detain me. Spent about 30 days in detention, 35 days, I think. And they deported me. That's how I got back.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've done... a podcast before with an executive director for Families of Freedom, one of my best friends, Abraham Paulos, who's also from the continent, Eritrea, and he works a lot around deportations. So this is not a new thing, but for you to tell me that's how you came back here is pretty shocking.
Yeah, man, that's how it happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Personally, because I'm pretty spiritual, I believe you can kind of tell when life is taking you in. There's just certain things that happen, and whether you want to accept it or not, they're going to happen.
Right. No, I agree.
So, not to get weird in you guys, but I used to have dreams I was back here.
Uh-huh.
I used to have dreams I was in detention, but I didn't know where those places were.
Right. You were just like, what?
Just, I would just wake up like, but any dream I saw like I was back here, I used to pray like, God, please don't, just don't let me go. Please.
Yeah.
So, this is how creepy it got. One time, let me tell about the first dream, Joel.
Yeah.
I used to have this dream while I was still in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
That I was in a line in front of this one building where we were going in. And in the dream, I never knew what this place was. I just never knew.
Mm-hmm.
I had this dream a lot when I was a kid and growing up. Next dream I had was in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Where now, I'm in a place where you're allowed to play soccer, but there's like soldiers, there's this like fence. I'm like, what the is this? When I got to detention, bro, and we lined up for lunch, I saw what I used to dream about. I was like, what the... this is what it effing was, wow. Man. This was the dream, yo. And even the place where I used to play soccer, I was like, oh, shit, this is it.
This is it.
This is it, man.
So it was, you know? Like, you saw the future in your dreams.
Man, it was... oh, it's... but, okay, the craziest part of that dream was when I was like, okay, maybe it is time. The dream where I saw myself playing and there was like soldiers or something, security guards, that dream ended with me being in some street in Kenya, and I met my uncle, an uncle of mine called George.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the dream ended. So I get deported, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get to Kenya. They had to hand me over at every
authority. Yeah.
Yeah. So the final one, I'm in Kenya, whatever, a Kenyan guy. Takes my paperwork. He's like, yeah, man. So how long you been away? 12 years. I'm like, okay, what's your name? Kevin. I'm like, what's your name? George. I'm like, oh, my God.
Are you my uncle? Is he your uncle?
No. Oh, I was just like, oh. But it was like, there was just preparation, man. The whole time, you know. But it was, the trip was the harshest thing I experienced, because I spent 12 years in the U.S. I'm coming back with no formal education, like no bachelor's or whatever.
Yeah,
no
people money. Here, man, they asked for like,
you know,
let me see that diploma. I was like, you want to see the diploma? I had to like have family scan it and send it to me. I was like, all right.
Yeah. It's crazy like that. So, yeah, man, that was the scariest part of that trip, because I was coming back with nothing.
Right.
But thank God, here I am. But I will never regret that experience.
Right.
What I got from there, from the U.S., that's my second home, man. Mm. No matter what happens.
You still got peoples out in Haviland?
Yeah.
Shout out to Haviland, Kansas.
And everywhere else, man.
Yeah.
Denver. Mostly Denver. A lot of my family's in Denver.
Okay.
My mom is still in Arizona. But yeah.
But, I mean, I'm very much enjoying Nairobi and enjoying Kenya. How do you feel to be back now? Like, you know, this is years later. You're here. You're out and about, you know, I've met you in some pretty popular scenes. You're doing really interesting things. How does it feel to be here trying to make it work as an MC?
I think I'm grateful. I'm very glad I'm back for mm-hmm. in the sense of the timing.
Right.
Because like I said, the culture has grown, the hip hop culture.
Yeah.
That really excites me.
Right.
So when I left, there was nothing. So that excites me about Nairobi. And I can tell people are being more open to the hip hop culture, just the art culture. It's getting big.
Yeah.
That's exciting me. Is it making the money it can right now? Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
As an MC, I'm actually just, you know, trying to work on some projects right now.
Yeah, what are you working on right now?
There's a couple tracks I really want to put out, hopefully. That's part of the reason I think I was just like, I need to do what I need to do when I left What's Good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just had this fire in me, man, to just do this music and get it over with. You know, I was so terrified of being like 60 or 70 and be like, why didn't I just do it?
Yeah, I know that feeling, man.
No?
Yeah.
That terrified me. So I was like, yo, just try it.
Yeah.
Just put it out. Even if it sucks, at least you put it out.
You did it.
Yeah. So that's what I'm working on. Luckily, because I was at What's Good, you know, I got to meet a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people know I'm working on something.
Right.
I get a lot of good feedback.
Right. And on What's Good, you were doing your thing, man. When I went there, again, loitering at the What's Good studios, shout out to them. Like, you were really doing your thing, and it...
In fact, I wanna give him a special shout-out, despite of whatever happened, blah, blah, blah. It gave me a place to sharpen my skills, because I can tell you, there's not too many work environments when it comes to doing what you're good at,
mm-hmm.
that's like What's Good. Period.
Yeah.
There's not many environments you'll be able to get something like that. So, shout-out to them, man. Shout-out to the fam, man. Good people. As far as, you know, the arts, I can tell you they support it. You know, right now the big struggle is really just back to the money thing, because every Kenyan artist, if you ask them, yo, can I put your whatever in my video, a part of them still wants you to say, and I'll pay you this to do that, you know.
Yeah.
There's people out there taking advantage of this, but I'm giving you exposure.
Right.
And we're getting tired of that.
Right.
That's actually the mood kind of, right now. It's like, we're tired of the exposure's not, you know, feeding us. So, but I am excited to be back.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm most excited about is putting my stuff out there to challenge the culture and be like, this is how good. I'm not saying I'm like good, but I know that it will influence them. Like, you know what? I need to rethink what I'm doing.
Right.
And I need to go at it like this dude is going at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Influence them, like light a fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think I'm getting there, because so far the few things I've done, mm-hmm. I could see it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Cool. Anything you want to plug while we're on here?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm going to get weird on you guys once again.
I think they're ready for it at this point.
First of all, man, I'm just grateful that we did this, man.
Yeah, man. I've been trying to do this for a minute. We had chatted in the beginning, and then life took over.
Which is funny, because I was supposed to interview you. And
yeah.
That flipped. But anyway, I'm grateful. Like, I don't take stuff like this for granted. Especially because of the timing, once again, because mm-hmm. since I left What's Good, some things have just fallen into place without me even trying. Like, when you hit me up, like I said, it was just at that.
Right.
Yeah. So I appreciate this. Of course, along with my faith, I thank God, man. I thank Christ for giving me a second chance to come from the U.S. 12 years, you know, not knowing what you're going to do, and to be where I am right now is nothing short of a miracle. Period.
Mm,
that's just my
that.
Faith. That's just what I believe. And then, shout out to my family, man, because they could have disowned me, be like, yo, we can't help you, you wasted a whole 12 years.
Yeah.
But they stuck with me, they're still with me, shout out to my family. I think that's what, and shout out to my baby daughter, man, Mahalia, that's another blessing that I didn't expect.
Shout out to her.
Shout out to Mahalia.
All these guys, man, like you, some of my friends who've been on these journeys, all have baby girls, man.
And that's what it is.
Yeah, you know, and it just flips the script on them.
Women are taking over in all kinds of ways, man. It's funny. Oh, and then, of course, check out my SoundCloud page. I'm trying to put up stuff as often as I can. And it's just Service, Servhis. And that's where you can find me anywhere, Servhis.
Are you on Twitter, Facebook?
Twitter, Service, Instagram.
Kevin Service, Service or just Service?
And on Facebook, mm-hmm. I have my personal page, which is Kevin Service, but mm-hmm. I have a... I guess an artist page, which is Service.
Servis, it's S-E-R-V-H-I-S.
Yes, S-E-R-V-H-I-S, but you just pronounce it like the regular service.
Servis, yeah. Got you, got you. Man, it's been a real pleasure. Hopefully we can do this again soon.
Man, I would like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
No, I mean, I'm here. And you really have your ear to the ground here. I'm trying to learn more, see more in the time that I'm here, because I don't want to look back and be like, oh, I've only done this. And Nairobi's a really vibrant scene, and you opened one of those doors. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No problem, bro. Oh, one last shout out, man, to the United States of America, man. Da, you da, know, da, at the end of da, the day. Da, da, da. Oh, say, can you see? Yo, I memorized that joint waiting to hopefully one day be a citizen, man. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to get all the verses. But shout out to the U.S. at the end of the day. I'm not
playing. Hey, no, the verses. Go ahead. No. Shout out to them.
Yeah, man. Shout out to the and everybody who helped me, man. My family out there. Shout out to Tamika. Shout out to Mike. Man, it's just too many. Shout out to my brother, man. Rashik Mickens, man. Shout out to that homie.
He'll get the link to this episode, yeah. And they could all blast it out. Thanks again, Kevin. Check us out, Global Citizen Podcast. That's my Instagram. Download this on MID3. iTunes, Google Play.
That boy is everywhere.
Everywhere, right? Twitter, MI83. Me personally, Joey, JOWAY25. It's been real, y'all. Peace.
Hey, yo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like them brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, and Haitian. Name is Fife Dog from the Zulu Nation. So you're in the jam that we can get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town.